Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-claimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, education in America. Is education designed to enlighten students, develop free thinkers who can contribute to society? Is education currently being used to dumb people down? That's the question a gentleman brought up in an article that I read. I said, it sounds like a good topic to talk about on the show. Let's start with a quote from Malcolm X. He said, education is the passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today. Education is the passport to the future, for tomorrow belongs to those who prepare for it today. Malcolm X, unquote. From 13.org, acts against the education of slaves. They feared that black literacy would prove a threat to the slave system, right? That's how they was getting down, making money back then, right? Which relied on slaves' dependence on their masters, right? Key words here is slaves relied on the slaves' dependency, right? On their masters, right? Some cool folks, right? Whites in many colonies instituted laws forbidding slaves to learn to read or write and making it a crime for others to teach them. Now, just right there, you should learn a whole. You should learn a whole lot from that passage, that paragraph right there, right? About education, how important education is, because it helps maintain a system of slavery, right, in this country. From library.cornell.edu, slave narratives. I will be heard. Abolitionism in America. In most southern states, anyone caught teaching a slave to read would be fined, imprisoned, or whipped. The slaves themselves often suffered severe punishment for the crime of literacy. The slaves themselves, folk, right? Often suffered severe punishment for the crime of literacy, right? Learning, right? Learning how to read, right? From savage beatings to the amputation of fingers and toes, right? All right, so people risk their lives to learn how to read. That's how important that these guys thought education was back in the day. Not just the slaves, the slave masters believed that education, like Malcolm said, was the key to the future, right? So they tried to cut these guys' future off, literally, figuratively, and actually, right? They beating them and amputating fingers and toes and things like that. That's how important this was to these slaves. And I guess I'm speaking out to the descendants of these people who were enslaved in this country and people who are, you know, oppressed in this country. Education appears to have been perceived as a catalyst for freedom during chattel slavery. Remember, ultimately, a slave is mentally and physically controlled by his captor. Or his master, right? Slavery and the southern plantations made the U.S. a global economic power. Cotton made the U.S. big, right? Educated slave is a slave whose mind is not held captive by the lack of knowledge or knowing how to navigate, manipulate, maneuver, and influence and interpret the laws, resources, economy, and people. The less a slave knows, the less a slave can do. The less a slave knows, the less a slave can do. Just apply that to more contemporary times, today's times. The less you know, the less you can do, right? Because education is just the beginning of moving forward, pulling yourself up out of the holes that you're in. Anybody. More money for the slave master, right? It meant more money for the slave master. And the slave remains a slave too. Right? It's funny how the slaves were major contributors before becoming educated in the ways of their captors or slave masters. Imagine what they could do if they were afforded an education and a common purpose. History. They said on August 21st, 1831, in slave Virginia, Nat Turner led a bloody revolt which changed the course of American history. The uprising in Southampton County led to the killing of an estimated 55 white people, resulting in execution of 55 black people and the beating of hundreds of others by white mobs, right? While the rebellion only lasted 24 hours, it prompted a renewed wave of oppressive legislation prohibiting enslaved people's movement, assembly, and education. Prohibiting enslaved people's movement, assembly, and education. If you self-prohibit, right, your movement, assembly, and education, you are doing the same thing. You're oppressing yourself, which is why I'm reading this. This is just not just a historical reading. Okay? It's at the same time, abolitionists saw an opening for the argument that the system of slavery was untenable, right? Hey, we're not going to be able to do this. Anyway, they argued about that, right? Anyway, ultimately, Virginia and other southern states opted to keep slavery in place and tighten control of African Americans' lives, including their literacy. Tighten control of African Americans' lives, including their literacy. For you folks that think that you shouldn't get an education. In the antebellum South, it was estimated that only 10% of enslaved people were literate. For many enslavers, this rate was too high. Clarence Lussane, a professor of political science at Howard University, notes there was a growing belief that an educated enslaved person was a dangerous person. An educated enslaved person was a dangerous person. So, I said, how can something so coveted and powerful be used to oppress or dumb down anybody? Because, you know, we got people here, even white folks, risking their lives or their safety to help black people read. Black people just, you know, hey, I'm going to learn how to read. Nat Turner learned how to read and got a little rebellion together, right? And they started rebellion against their cruel masters. So, you know, so. From isschoolconnect.com, why is education important? So I say that's a good start. We're going to start off with the positive because, you know, we're going to get into why this man said that education is dumbing down people. You got 9 reasons why it's important to hear from isschoolconnect.com, right? It helps you realize your true potential. Well, if I'm trying to oppress you, suppress you, I don't want you to realize your true potential. I want your true potential to be what I dictate to you, right? So wherever I put you at is where I want you to be at, right? A good education helps you recognize yourself and your strengths. You learn about the world and yourself. You come across things that interest you. You find things that are good, that you are good at. Figure out how you can contribute and help the world grow, right? To folks, You're going to help yourself grow, help your family grow, your community grow, your peoples grow, right? All right? And that's going to help the world grow. All that spreads out like that, right? It's like a virus, but this is a healthy virus, right? I don't know if that's a good way to, that's a good way to look at it, but maybe virus is not the term I should be using around, right about now. But you get what I'm saying. Education gives you opportunities to explore yourself, your surroundings, and empowers you to understand the ways of the world. So you don't want a slave understanding the ways of the world, right? It gives you the freedom to live a life of your choice. Ooh. Okay? Just keep that in mind. Sharpening critical skills. Education helps you develop critical skills like decision-making, mental agility, problem-solving. Problem-solving. We have many problems that we need to solve. We need to be mentally agile to do them. Right? Logical thinking, right? We need to think logically, right? Not emotionally, right? People face problems in their professional as well as personal lives. Such situations, the ability to make rational and informed decisions come from how educated and self-aware they are. And that doesn't mean you got a sheet of paper in front of you, education, as we're going to find out. That education, I'm not saying don't get a formalized education, but you can educate yourself without going to school. And I'm not advocating not getting it, that piece of paper, right? Because it's required in some forms of employment, right? Anyway, education breeds creativity and innovation, right? So that's self-explanatory, right? More opportunities. Investing in good education will increase your confidence, will help you achieve more. As we said, there are some things that this society is built on education levels, right? Skill levels, right? Even though, you know, if you're a plumber, you get that paper behind you, certification. Now you are a certified plumber, right? Instead of a guy that's just walking around doing some plumbing work, right? The difference. And so that certified plumbing, when those big jobs come up, he already got the okay, this guy's certified. I say such a school says he's qualified to do the job, so he can go on and work. Maybe the worst plumber on the planet, I don't know. But let's just say he ain't. He isn't. Education opens up new avenues, right? When you invest in educating, you broaden your perspective in that area. You get opportunities to test and enhance your skill set, okay? Become better at the thing that you have become interested in, right? As you educate yourself, you are learning something new every day without even realizing it. That's right, because education is like life. It's a part of life that you are learning every day. Every day you are learning something. Whether you realize it or not, you are taking in information and learning about things, right? Financial stability. Students who graduate from esteemed colleges have higher chance of landing well-paid jobs. That seems kind of one-sided to me, but that's the way it is. So it's like that, and that's the way it is, right? You should know that, right? The more knowledge you gain, the more skilled you become, and hence more opportunities open up for you, right? If you're good at something and know your way around it, rest assured you will be compensated well. Supporting a developed society is number five, right? Learn about things like culture, history, science. They can view problems from a much informed perspective. It gives people a chance to mold themselves into more responsible members of society. More responsible members of society. More responsible members of society. Educated individuals are more likely to get well-paying jobs and engage in effective trade and commerce practices, economics, right? These, in turn, contribute to driving more capital to the economy. Hence, education drives growth in countries and supports a developing society. Number six, giving back to the community. Number six, giving back to the community. When people can afford a stable life for themselves, they are more likely or able to They just said likely. I'm going to say able to take the initiative to solve local problems. Education enables people to be self-dependent. It also teaches people the need for a stable and secure community. It also teaches people the need for a stable and secure community. I'm going to just add on to that. We don't need an education to know that you need a stable and secure community. All this violence that we have in our community, mayhem and chaos, we don't need the education to know that. But they say that it teaches people the need for a stable and secure community. I don't know what they mean by that, but I'm just disagreeing with that. Doesn't take an education for that. As a result, people join hands to help the less fortunate and solve the community's most pressing issues, right? Okay, so if you're doing a little better or there's someone you have some information that they don't know about resources or how to deal with conflict resolution and things like that, sex education, relationships and things like that. So that's good stuff. You may have some skill in helping people through those type of things, right? And points of education is at the forefront when it comes to social issues, right? No matter if it's the education or maintaining clean neighborhoods, practicing good sanitation, or knowing your rights, people can live only by exposing them to new possibilities by educating them. Blurring geographical boundaries. The point of education, especially pronounced when we want to communicate with people from different cultures across the world. Yes, it helps to know something about the people that you're communicating with, right? Because you don't want to offend them, and you want to know that they're not offending you by certain behaviors, right? So yes, digital mediums of learning and spreading information have played an instrumental role bridging this gap. They have allowed more people to connect, interact, and learn. Right. So you have a computer, a cell phone, which is a computer. You have information in your hand. Most people have a cell phone. Use it. Equal opportunities. Education helps us create equal opportunities, right? They, in turn, strive to create more opportunities for others, right? The people that benefit from that. Education makes people more tolerant of others. It opens the gate for equal opportunities and better standard of living for everyone. Number 9, education as a tool of empowerment, which is about everything that we talked about. It's not the only 9 things. These are just 9 things that God said this author talked about, right? So education empowers people. Increased education rates for women have led to more women to join the workforce, right? It has helped in the creation of a more inclusive and empathetic society because you know more. You know how to deal with a more complex society, which we live in a complex society in because you have so many people here, right? They say bonus questions, reasons. It enables you to become independent, confident, and courageous. Just remember that. Creates a safer world to live in. Improves productivity in the society, helps you get to know yourself, improves mental as well as physical health, promotes, maintains peace among members of the global community, develops problem-solving and critical thinking skills, helps in keeping up with the dynamic environment and adapting to it, right? Key takeaways. Nelson Mandela once said, education is the most powerful weapon in the world. Education can change the world. If you think about it, having an education shaped you as a human being. You are aware of yourself. You realize your place in the world, and you can dream of achieving big things. This is why the importance of education cannot be stressed enough. So, education has launched the success of many, particularly those whose parents couldn't provide them with the financial support of being wealthy, right? So education is really, been there. Still, there are many financially successful people who didn't come from the so-called upper class, who upper class, and so who did pretty well for themselves, but may not be wealthy, right? So it's just education helps everybody, poor, upper class, middle class, you know. Wealth and exploitation can't be the exploitation can't be the only objective for education, right? As we just talked about, helping other people. If you get that, you have an education. Of course, we know people use knowledge to oppress, right? So I guess I should be saying wealth and exploitation shouldn't be the only objective of education, of getting information, right? Who does education best serve? Is there a sinister objective of education? Say it ain't so. Education is married with success in America. Legally, unless you can sing, dance, act, box, perform some extremely entertaining feat, and it takes some sort of education even to do that, and are successful at earning an income from that skill, you will most likely need or benefit from having an education, right? They don't ask about your education level randomly, and for some jobs, it is a requirement, right? You have to have an education. Those teachers have to go to college to become teachers. Engineers, they have to go to school for that, right? Doctors, nurses, all the hospital staff, they all going to some kind of school. Plumbers, certified ones, they're going to somewhere to learn. Electricians, right? So the trades, you know, that's education also. So is there a hidden agenda of compulsory schooling, right? Because Mr. John Taylor Gatto states that education is dumbing us down. I said, whoa, what are you talking about? Education, that's how that helped me get jobs. The people I know get some of the jobs that they had. They had to go to school to get their job, right? Okay, the job means to work for somebody, so you sell yourself to work for somebody. So keep that in mind, right? So he said the truth is, he said schools don't really teach anything except how to obey orders. I say, what the hell is this dude talking about? But you got to obey orders. You go to school, which can be chaotic in school. You have to have some order of 25, 30 people in the classroom. You have to have some order in that classroom in order for people to learn, to think, right? She said, this is a great mystery to him, because thousands of humane, caring people work in the schools as teachers and aides and administrators, but the abstract logic of the institution overwhelms the individual contributions, he says, right? So John Taylor Gatto spent nearly 30 years as a teacher in the New York City public school system. He was awarded the New York City Teacher of the Year 3 consecutive years and was recognized as New York State Teacher of the Year in 1991. So I guess you would think that he might have a clue about what he's talking about. So let's go to the beginning of this education thing. I went to find law, compulsory education law. I had to go to the root. They said that these laws were put in place not only to improve literacy rates, but also to discourage the widespread child labor practices of the 19th and the early 20th century. So what you talking about, Willis? That's okay. So had a double. That's a double-edged sword, right? Massachusetts became the first U.S. state to enact compulsory education law in 1852. It had already passed a similar law in 1647 when it was still a British colony. In 1852, law required every city and town to offer primary school focusing on grammar and basic arithmetic. Y'all heard that? Grammar and basic arithmetic, right? Parents who refused to send their children to school were fined and in some cases stripped of their parental rights, and their children are apprenticed to others, right? Taken out of the home, right? That sound familiar? Because they had that kind of a threat today, right? So prior to the Massachusetts law and other states such as such laws, education typically was provided by private schools run by the churches, right? Since they also charged tuition, poor children were excluded or received informal schooling at home. So they basically they're saying that they didn't get it. I guess the assumption is they didn't get a good education because they didn't get any, or they got something at home. It may have been inadequate. I don't know. Because doesn't mean it's inadequate. It may not be just recognized. We don't go forward. That would change during the immigration boom between the 19th and 20th centuries, as education was seen as the best way to assimilate immigrant children. So now we have a political agenda, education, right? So they're going to assimilate the children of immigrant children. So wherever you were when you came here, you no longer, you're going to become us, right? And you can see education being used that way today with some populations of the community, of the U.S. community, being used to assimilate, indoctrinate, right? During that time, numerous states enacted compulsory education laws designed to take education out of the hands of the parochial schools, right? And primarily to into the purview of state-run public schools, right? These actions were taken in growing response to fear of immigrant values and the Catholic Church itself. The Supreme Court later overturned these so-called compulsory education laws that required students to attend public schools only, right? So that means Catholic school was on and popping, right? So you can have your private schools, right? That means those who could pay got to probably had access to better, you know, schooling, right? Because if you pay people more money, they're going to go to where they can make the more money from. So anyway, another motivation was the growing public concern over child labor and the belief compulsory attendance at school would discourage factory workers from exploiting children. All right, so we got a lot of social political agendas here. In fact, Alabama temporarily repealed its compulsory education law in response to pressure from a large textile company in the state. See that? It's that political, social political thing right there going there. All right? From the libertarianism.org, right? Once again, one of the leading reasons for tightening the central control of the public schools was the troublesome wave of immigrants in the late 19th and the early 20th century. More than ever, it was important to the educationists to direct, assimilate, and control the new immigrants and to mold them into older and more homogeneous systems. Right? Immigrants were expected to abandon their previous language as well as their often contrasting and diverse values and cultures. Now, who else did that happen to in this country? You know what I'm saying? Those brothers, it was those forced laborers, right, that came here, right? The people that they forced into labor, they took away their previous language as well as their diverse values and cultures, right? Black folks, right? Certain population of black folks in this country were just stripped. So I'm just saying, sounds like the guy has a point. That kind of supports what the guy's saying, is they are using education to control you, to dumb you up, because they're going to take what you know away from you and give you what they want you to know. right? In some cases, even schools were compulsory for non-English speaking immigrants. Catholics often insisted on establishing their own parochial schools. And I know, as far as I know, Catholic schools have always been around. People have been trying to get their kids in there for a long time. You can't, if you don't have the dough, right? You don't have the dough, you can't go, right? So here you see, it doesn't, I mean, when you talk about school, you don't want to think about school as dumbing anybody down. But anytime you strip a person of their language, their values and cultures, you have dumbed them down, if that's your goal. So, and I'm not saying you know, someone coming to the United States and learn English, but you don't want to strip people. But you can see, this has not been the same author. And, you know, the guy that was saying that school, Gatto was saying the school was designed to dumb people down. This article kind of supports that from libertarianism.org. They're saying, hey, they are trying to dumb, these ain't even black folks. These are immigrants, white immigrants coming in here, Caucasian immigrants coming into the fold. And they call America the melting pot, but that sounds more like brainwashing, right? I'm going to strip you of everything that you knew, valued, loved, and I'm going to feed you a new you. What's that movie where they turned people, they made people the way they wanted to just get out. Yeah, they just made a new person, put them inside a new body. You know, I don't know, but, you know. Education was used as a form of indoctrinating and assimilating immigrants. And with the arrival of these immigrants comes adults in need of work. These adults, immigrants, and American will need to buy into or subscribe to the American way of life, right? Whatever you was thinking before you got here, you got to get rid of it. That's the same mentality they had for the slave. Right? Whatever it was, whatever you were, you are no longer when you get here to tell you to do, right? I like to say they killed two birds or maybe three birds with one stone at this point, impacting on immigrant children, adults, and American children, particularly the poor. Of course, blacks were not afforded the same opportunity, being viewed as property at a time, but blacks like Nat Turner still learned how to read the King's English. And you see how dangerous that was, right, to the controlling society, right? You see Nat Turner, what he did, I don't know if you know the story of Nat Turner. He was a black guy, slave, who knew how to read. He took the Bible, they used him. Teachers use the Bible to calm the slaves down. They use religion to calm you down so that you don't revolt. So you look for another way, anything but revolting against your master to get out of that situation. You're waiting for, Jesus to come, or when you die, you go to heaven, and anything to stop you from getting out of that situation. Well, I don't think the Bible really teaches you that you're not supposed to try to, if you fall, you're not supposed to get up. If you just put stuck in a hole, you're not supposed to try to pull it out. I don't think that's the teaching of the scriptures, right? Anyway, but we're not going to go there. Maybe one day I might even venture to do a show based on some of that stuff, but let's continue. When you consider Nat Turner, education could be a problem. The Black Panthers were, started by college students, right? Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, some other guys that you really don't know. I think it was six of them. They were all college students. Grandmaster Jay is well informed of the principles, objectives, laws of Americans, of the Americans' powerful ones. Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Adam Clayton Powell, Marcus Garvey. He started the University of Birkbeck. He was educated at the University of Burbank College. Malcolm X's highest level of formal education, they said, was the eighth grade. And look what he accomplished. That's why I say education is not necessarily a thing that you need to go to a school or get a certificate for. Education is what you put into your mind, right? I'm not saying don't get that piece of paper. Don't get me wrong, because you needed to do certain things. If you don't, if you have the mental capacity to excel, do your thing, right? I'd say all are dangerous or a threat to those who sought to indoctrinate and force people to submit to their will of tyranny and untruth. But thinking about it, how educated could these guys have been to think that another man, you could just tell him he's something that he's not, and he would just submit to that? They would give up being a man because you got your foot on his neck. That reminds him, struggle that he's in, as long as your foot is on his neck. Anyway, looking at American society through the lens of the unjust, greedy, and powerful ones, I can see a need for a standard of a non-threatening mindset. I can see a need for a standard non-threatening mindset. I got to get that garbage out of his mind. I need him to think this way, and I need him to forget about that stuff, because that is contrary to what we do here. So anything that is against me, I have to destroy it, right? Sounds like a man who lives in fear who would even implicate that, right? But I get it. I'm not saying it's right, but I get it. I can see the need for a standard non-threatening mindset. It is easier, to quote the poet Noor, it is easier to control an animal if you give him the internal motivation to control himself than to struggle with that animal's desire to self-rule. Get that from the poet Noor. Education has become a constitutional right that you cannot just take away. From libertarianism.org, while compulsory schooling is still the norm, several exceptions have been made for specific groups of people opposed to the law. For instance, U.S. Supreme Court in Wisconsin versus Yoder, and that's not the guy from Star Wars, right? Ruled in 1972 that the Amish parents were exempt from such laws past the eighth grade. Also, states typically grant exemption to those who homeschool their children as long as they meet the standards required of public and state accredited private schools, right? All right. So school education is standardized, right? Students, they even have many states offering work release permits that allow students to work limited hours outside of the school during normal school hours, right? Education is Elwood P. Cubberly put the case for urban school centralization in a forthright manner. He said one of the important rules of the change from ward representation to election from the city at large is that the inevitable representation from those poor wards is eliminated. Y'all heard that? This is gerrymandering at its best, right? The inevitable representation from these poor wards is eliminated, and the board comes to partake of the best characteristics of the city as a whole. Woo! That sound racist to you? He warned that the less intelligent and progressive element would wear out the better elements and come to rule the board. Who were these better elements? Crumbly answers clearly. Men who are successful in the handling of large business, undertakings, manufacturers, merchants, bankers, contractors, and professional men or large practice would perhaps come first. So they're going to get the lion's share, basically saying that
excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. All right, so here we got Mr. Cumberley. Who the hell was Elwood Patterson Cumberley? Well, he was June 6, 1986 to September 14, 1941. He died. He's an American engineer and pioneer in the field of educational administration. You don't have to be a genius to conclude who Edward P. Cumberley was referring to as less intelligent and progressive element. But just in case you don't know, from Stanford Daily, Eugenics on the Farm, Elwood Cumberley, the Stanford Daily, StanfordDaily.com, right, said on February 2020, for Elwood Cumberley, the study of education was deeply shaped by eugenics. Through selective reproduction based on ableism and, of course, racism, the obvious, right? So here you have racist elements of social, political, economical manipulation through access to the education system, right? You get the crumbs off the table, right? The purpose, basically because you're not really, they say you're not even eligible, you're not capable. And you probably shouldn't even have it, basically, because you're going to get it first. So if it was education was a piece of meat, you'd probably get the bones with a little bit of, what's that, the ribs. It'd be like spare ribs to you. So isn't that slave food, spare ribs and stuff? So it's a whole lot of that. You get what I don't want kind of stuff going on, or you get after I get what I want to get from something going on here. Historically, I didn't go so far as to look and see how deep this thing was embedded in the educational system, but it seems like it does exist. So just look out for it. He had the racist element of social, political, economical manipulation through access to the education system. The purpose is to control and maintain power over the poor or ignorant ones. And we don't have to be a genius to figure out what they're talking about. It's not far-fetched to assert that access to education is or can be used to oppress and control. Indoctrination and assimilation do not promote free thinking, but influence directed, guided, and sheepish thinking. I don't claim to know that or what sheep are thinking, but the idea is that a sheep's life and energy are exploited by their shepherd. Still, Elwood P. Cumberley's plot is not a reason not to take advantage of getting a free education. From libertarian.org again. It's hardly a coincidence then that compulsory public schooling appeared first in America under the Calvinist Puritans. Massachusetts Bay Colony were eager to adopt the Calvinist plan for compulsory education in order to ensure the perpetuation of Calvinism and the suppression of possible dissent. So everybody's trying to manipulate, assimilate, and indoctrinate, right? And we still have that going on today. I've seen signs of it. Only a year after passing the first set of laws, the colony in 1642 enacted a compulsory that it be lawful for all children. Furthermore, the law provided that should state officials judge parents to be unfit, unable to care for the children properly. The government would seize the children as apprentice, right? Then to itself to impart the required instruction. Makes you wonder what were they instructing these kids to do, right? 5 years later, the colony followed up this law with the establishment of a system of public school. Compulsory schooling began in the modern world with the Protestant Reformation. Before the Reformation, instruction had been carried out privately in church, schools, and universities. But Martin Luther, in his famous letter to the German rulers in 1524, urged the establishment of public schools and compulsory attendance, right? Puritan influence spread swiftly from Massachusetts to the other colonies in New York, blah, 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 right? High Puritan Connecticut soon imposed compulsory schools, and in 1742, that colony attempted to suppress the dissenting New Light movement by prohibiting that sect from operating any schools. So it's not far-fetched that this guy's saying they try to dumb people down, you know, because here we got these people who have the power to do what they want, right? The New Light sect may tend to train youth in ill principles and practices. I don't know what they were, but and introduce such disorders as may be fatal consequences to the public and will of colony. So I don't know what that was, but that's very interesting right there. It's no coincidence that the New England colony did not establish a public school system was Rhode Island, which was founded and peopled by heretics from the Calvinist orthodoxy, right? Orthodox Calvinist church, right? So it's a lot of juggling here going on, and we see people try to, depending on who you are, dumb other people down with the knowledge that they have. They want to dumb them down. So that's the definition of indoctrination and assimilation. So how much education can you be giving a student, child, if you're trying to indoctrinate and assimilate them, right? In order to be successful, you must have the power to enforce your will and oppress the will of others. Question, who is presently using the power of government and the educational system to indoctrinate, assimilate, and force their will on the people? Education's origins were very sectarian, subjective, and goal-orientated. Who's the founder of American education system? From MTSU EDU. They said it's a guy named Horace Mann, 1796 to 1859. He's behind establishing the unified school systems, worked to establish a varied curriculum that excluded sectarian instruction. His vision for public education was a precursor to the Supreme Court's eventual interpretation of the Establishment Clause and church-state separation principle in public schools, right? Mann played a key role in establishing the Massachusetts State Board of Education, and he went on to become the board's first Secretary of Education. Mann promoted universal education. He advocated for common schools institutions that would be available to everyone, regardless of their ability to pay tuition, to avoid the rigid class of systems in Europe, right? Mann wrote that education is the greatest equalizer of the conditions of men. Now, that's similar to what Malcolm X is saying, right? The balance wheel of the social machinery, right? He also argued that universal education would allow the United States to maintain a democracy. All Americans, he thought, must, if citizens of a republic, understand, and note he said citizens of a republic, which that's another show right there. Because they talk about whether we are a democracy or a republic. Anyway, as citizens of a republic, understand something of the true nature and functions of the government under which they live. So You need to know your rights, right? You see people doing that on YouTube now, mainly with the police. Man opposed, you need to go dig a little deeper than the police. There's a whole lot happening. I know we contact with the police frequently, but it's a lot that's going on that we need to be familiar with. Man opposed sectarian instruction, right? He criticized as at the time and is still viewed by some today as hostile to religion and detrimental to both individual and social morals, right? Man opposed sectarian instruction and in its stead advocated instruction in universal Christian principles and values that would allow students to make their own moral judgments. Well, they're going to do that anyway, right? A Roman Catholic Church, for example, argued that the common schools were professing to be non-sectarian, in fact, embodied general Protestant principles contrary to the First Amendment, separates the church and state, right? So, excuse me, that does sound like a contradiction to me. First Amendment court holders later upheld man's non-sectarian version, right? The court invalidated school-sponsored prayer and Bible readers and caused grounds. Supreme Court had begun to use the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment to strike prayer and devotional Bible reading, right? Usually from the King James Bible, right? In defense of non-sectarian schools, in his school board report, Mann argued that the common school earnestly inculcates all Christian morals. Is that double talk or contradiction? And in receiving the Bible, it allows it to do what it is allowed to do in no other system, to speak for itself. But here it stops, because the common school disclaims to act as an umpire between hostile religious opinions. So you got me, I'm a Muslim and you reading out of the Bible. I'm a Buddhist, you reading out of the Bible. I'm whatever. Right? That's what they're talking about right there. So, the First Amendment provides that Congress make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting its free exercise. So that's interesting, because the free exercise of religion means I should be able to read the Bible in school. Right? We've seen that. You don't have no law establishing it. You have to read the Bible. No law prohibiting its free exercise that I can't, right? So it protects freedom of speech, the press, assembly, and the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. It says, I don't know why we think that these guys in 1776 had all the answers to everything. See, to me, those guys was just working for themselves. But we don't go on. Right? Christian values in school represent the presence of a sectarian principle. After all, that is hardly the only religious ideology practiced in America. Non-sectarian means not involved and related to specific religious sect or political group. Maybe there was less diversity back then. I don't know. But it sounds like even under the Christian umbrella, these guys was feuding. While professing one thing and doing another, schools appear to be influenced by sectarian, secular government powers. Maybe that is why some schools are out of control. The absence of a moral, ethical foundation, but shouldn't students arrive at school with such a foundation, no matter what religious or ethnic background they come from? I mean, but aren't students supposed to have learned some things at that place where they lay their head down at from those two people who they've been seeing all their lives? I'm just saying. From J.R.M. Seven's blog, right? William Sykes, right? Against school response, right? This guy says, he claims that schools are not places for children to learn, develop, and flourish. Rather, he argues that schools are designed to suppress children, dehumanize them, and restrict them from growing up and becoming adults. A All right? From azquotes.com. Ken, American journalist, right? Scholar of English. Said the aim of public education is not to spread enlightenment at all. It is simply to reduce as many individuals as possible to the same safe level to breathe and standard citizenry. To put down dissent and originality. Now, I just read some historical stuff to you that said exactly that. So maybe that's why these guys are saying it. Maybe they looking at being educators. They see this. The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety. That's that. Last time you heard that was during the first COVID-19 thing. They said they're using fear to motivate people. And get them to do what they want them to do, to herd them into doing what they want them to do. By menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary, right? That's a hell of a statement right there. And that right there seems like a show. They're saying that we're being manipulated by the powers to be, the powerful ones. H.L. Mencken, right? He says another thing. He says, this is from gooddreads.com. Quotes. They quote him saying, the plain fact is that education is itself a form of propaganda, a deliberate scheme to outfit the pupil, not with the capacity to weigh ideas, but with a simple appetite for gulping ideas ready-made. The aim is to make good citizens, which is to say docile and uninquisitive citizens. Don't question the government. Sounds like the totalitarian state, right? But that is his opinion, right? That's what you might think, right? Well, I just read that. But his opinion, as we know, everyone has an opinion. But this guy is not alone in his opinion. And it's not, appears to be documented because I wasn't there. This stuff is old stuff, and I'm just reading stuff that other people wrote. But we're going to assume that these things that people wrote are historical. What's going on? Homeschool think tank, right? They say that what's being taught isn't new. In fact, generation after generation has been learning the same hidden lessons. The same hidden lessons. Hidden lessons? These lessons are so well disguised that even well-meaning teachers and administrators don't realize how well the agenda has been packaged. Introduction to Dumbing Us Down, right? This is from Gatto, right? What led on Gatto to wonder if the school system is dumbing us down, right? So he has a book called Dumbing Us Down. You might want to check it out. The Hidden Agenda of Compulsory Schooling. Basically to make you sheepish. You know what sheep are, right? And they follow the shepherd. He's not a sheep. Why do they follow? He's a man. So people might think it is natural for a sheep to follow a man. If you think that, you're crazy, because that's like saying it's natural for you to follow a sheep. So sheep lead sheep, men supposed to lead men, right? So you follow a man, you lead him because you follow him to your exploitation. So he's giving them something that they want, that they benefit from, and he's taking from them what he wants, right? As long as that sheep act the way that he want them to act, they good until he ready to come for them, right? Because lamb chops taste good. And what else they eat off the sheep? I don't know how the deal go, but I know he get wool from him. And whatever he going to get whatever he gets from him, right? Children and, you know, reproduction, you know. Anyway, Gatto saying the trouble was that the unlikeliest kid kept demonstrating to him at random moments so many of the hallmarks of human excellence, insight, wisdom, justice, resourcefulness, courage, originality, that I became confused, he said. They didn't do this often enough to make my teaching easy, but they did it often enough that I began to wonder, reluctantly, whether it was possible that being in school itself is what was dumbing them down. Was it possible that he had been hired not to enlarge children's power, but to diminish it? This is an educator. This is a hell of a way of looking at the of educational system. That seemed crazy on the face of it, yes. But slowly, he said, he began to realize that the bells and the confinement, the crazy sequence, the age segregation, the lack of privacy, the constant surveillance, and all the rest of the national curriculum for schooling were designed exactly as if someone had set out to prevent children from learning how to think and act, to coax them into addiction and dependent behavior. So to make you dependent on the powerful ones, not to go against them, not to challenge them. Sheepish, right? Sheep never go after the shepherd, or rarely. Guess might get a little cocky in there sometimes, you know. I don't know. Crazy sheep. You might have a crazy sheep every once in a while. I don't know. Never heard it. Sheep never care for animals. But you get my point. He said, he began to devise guerrilla exercises to allow as many of the kids that he thought as possible, the raw material possible, have always used to educate themselves. Privacy, choice, freedom from surveillance, and as broad range of situations and human associations as his power, limited power and resources could manage. But he's saying, hey, these kids can learn, but they they are not learning from the situation that they were in, right? From the standardized school education that they were providing for them. Not just education, just the whole system. Stop, go, all of that stuff is just training you to do what somebody tell you to do, right? And, you know, I know we're going to argue about being orderly and stuff like that. But anyway, he tried to maneuver them into positions where they would have a chance to be their own teachers and to make themselves the major texts of their own education. Woo! As a professor, teachers have good intentions, he said, right? So this from chapter 4 of Dumbing This Down. School teachers to obey orders, he said. The truth is schools don't really teach anything except how to obey orders. Thousands of humane, caring people work in the schools, right? Lesson 1. The first lesson he teaches is confusing, he says. This is an educator. He said that he teaches too much. He shares that quality in education entails learning about something in depth. In schools, too much is taught. Everything out of context, and there is no particular reason for any of it. There is a lack of coherence. Mr. Gatto states that the first lesson he teaches students is confusion is their destiny. Confusion is their destiny. Lesson 2, class position. He shares the second lesson he teaches is to stay in class where they belong. He is to make them like being locked together with children who have similar numbers to their own. He does his job well. The children won't even be able to imagine themselves anywhere else. He is to remind them that future employers will hire them based on their test scores and grades, even though his own experience tells him otherwise. I never heard of employers looking at your test scores and grades. Maybe it's somebody like that. I don't know. I never heard of that. But I don't know what he's saying. Oh, we have a caller. Oh, no, no. That's just me. Okay. Anybody want to say anything? We now is a good chance because we're almost at 20 minutes left. So I don't know what school. I thought he was in New York. He said, it's my experience. Students do imagine being somewhere else, as evidenced by students roaming the school halls, cutting class, in classrooms they don't belong, and truant. Look, you have to be in class in order to get the information the teacher is providing. Maybe the absence of a desire to be where they can get an education is indicative of their inability to imagine themselves anywhere else in the near or distant future. Lesson 3, indifference. The third lesson, Gallo teaches indifference. He is to teach children not to care too much about anything, but appear as if they do. When he plans a lesson well, students will be eager to win his favor. However, when the bell rings, they are expected to move quickly to the next destination. Clearly, nothing of importance is ever finished. Gallo states, indeed, the lesson of bells is that no work is worth finishing. So why care too deeply about anything? That's interesting because I know the teachers emphasize students completing their work. You know, that's how you pass. And that's why this, some of the things that this Gallo was saying is, I don't know. You make your own decision, though. Now, lesson number 4, emotional dependency, said, by the stars and red checks, smiles and frowns, prizes, honors, graces, right? And a lot of that goes on in schools, like incentives and things like that, and kids being punished, you know, by, I guess, or shown that they have failed, right? I teach kids to surrender their will to the predestined chain of command. Rights may be granted or withheld by authority without appeal, because rights do not exist inside a school. You don't have rights inside of a school. They're not even the right of free speech, as the Supreme Court has ruled, unless the school authorities say that they do. Gallo also said that he is sure to mention that he must not encourage individuality amongst the students, as this threatens his control. He may allow a child to deceive so the child will be conditioned to depend on his favors, he states. Children are hostages to good behavior. So he says that kids are hostages to good behavior. No, I don't know. I think they expect children to behave everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Lesson 5, intellectual dependency. Good students wait for a teacher to tell them what to do. This is the most important lesson of them all. We must wait for people better trained than ourselves to make the meanings of our lives, he says. So this is what he's saying. It's just dumbing these kids down, because it doesn't require them to do to act independently. It requires them to act within a certain time frame of what they give them, to behave a particular way and so forth, right? Teachers talking, I guess you can't say nothing. He's talking. The power control that children think allows them to separate the successful children from the others very easy, he says. Successful children do the thinking he assigns them with ease, some enthusiasm, and very little resistance. And you can see what the unsuccessful ones do, right? He also knows that curiosity has very little place in the classroom. Mr. Gallo and the faceless system choose what the children will learn. Breaking the will of the children. When children don't comply with what they are told, they are often do
There are tested procedures to break the will of the children who resist. It is more difficult when a parent comes to the aid of the child. But this happens less and less, right? So the children, they break the will of the children, he says, the school. Children don't comply with what they're told, what they ought to do. There are procedures to break his will. But it's harder to do when you have a parent that comes up to support the child. Happens less and less despite the bad reputation of schools. An especially remarkable quote from the book of Dumb and Down said, no middle class parents have ever met, he has ever met, actually believe that their kid's school is one of the bad ones. Not one single parent in many years of teaching. That's amazing. And probably the best testimony to what happens to families when mother and father have been well-schooled themselves, learning the seven lessons. Gallows also says, good people wait for an expert to tell them what to do. Think of what might happen if people didn't wait to be told what to do. People might become self-sufficient unless a guaranteed supply of helpless people continue to pour out of our schools each year. We built a way of life that depends on people doing what they're told, because they don't know to tell themselves what to do. It's one of the biggest lessons he teaches, he says. Lesson number six, self-esteem. He teaches, it's provisional, he says. If you ever try to wrestle into line kids whose parents have convinced them to believe that they will be loved in spite of anything, you know how impossible it is to make self-confident spirits conform. Children are taught to value themselves based on test scores, grades, and report cards. They make decisions about themselves and their futures based on their ability to learn curriculum mandated by the teacher or the public education system. Instead of looking inward to judge themselves, children are taught to rely on others to tell them how good they are or are not. Greatest lesson we learn in school is to depend on others to tell us what we are worth. Lesson seven, one can't hide, right? One can't hide in school. Children learn quickly that they are always watched and that there is no private space or time. Students are encouraged to tattle on each other or tattle on their own parents. Of course, I encourage parents to file a report about their own child's waywardness too. And family trained to snitch on itself isn't likely to conceal any dangerous secrets. So what is that all about? That's a hell of a thing for them to assert. To assign a type of extended schooling called homework, so that the effect of surveillance, if not the surveillance itself, travels into private households where students might otherwise use free time to learn something unauthorized from a father or mother by exploration or by apprenticing to some wise person in the neighborhood. Well, I thought, theoretically, school and work take time away from family engagement, enrichment, and learning. School is designed to take children out of the workforce while their parents work to provide for the family. For the best part of the day, both and or child are out of the home. It seems employment would be a double-edged sword, thus taking away a family's precious time of bonding, nurturing, learning, instruction, while providing the basic needs of the family, food, shelter, heat, clothing. It's no coincidence that the work hour is 8 hours. We don't live in a family-friendly society. Slave labor, George Washington's Mount Vernon, right? Says during the winter, slaves toiled around 8 hours each day. Sound familiar? While in the summer, the work day might have been as long as 14 hours. Family wasn't important then, and it isn't important now. Old habits die hard. Power is hard work. Maintaining power is hard work. Telling on each other. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that telling refers to telling on wrongdoers, not revolutionaries, not protectors of the community. Imagine a community that doesn't tell. Many criminals would not be arrested or convicted. Someone could murder with impunity, steal with impunity, rape with impunity, and rob with impunity. People tell someone when they are assaulted by others. It is just that some people choose to handle it themselves, so there is no need to tell authorities. The threat of being told on serves as a deterrent from some offenses with some people. Sometimes the consequence of telling is critical or life-threatening. Ideally, there should be nothing to tell. Out of respect for the learning process of other students, educators, family, and themselves, students should have a non-offensive and disruptive manner. If someone stole Gato's car or wallet, I'm sure he would want someone to tell. Oh, I thought we had a caller. I'm going to keep going. He said, all the childless men who wrote, Gatto goes on to say, all the childless men who wrote these books long ago discovered the same thing. Children must closely watch if you want to keep a society under tight central control. Children will follow a private drummer if you can't get them into a uniform marching band. That's, you know that story that somebody hears a different drummer, they're different, they are outcasts and stuff like that. It is the great triumph of a compulsory government monopoly, mass schooling, that among even the best of my fellow teachers and among the best of my students, parents, only a small number can imagine a different way of doing things. He says, that's very interesting. He got some good points, because you can see it historically how what he's saying has been true. In my experience, an undisciplined child needs to be monitored until they learn to be disciplined and relatively responsible. Some adults need to be watched. We need to address the social, political, economical, biological, environmental, spiritual influences that facilitate and influence chaotic internal and external environments. If the education system is designed to create inadequate, dependent individuals, facilitate conformity and sheepish mentality, they have done a very good job. But other systems have assisted in this outcome. Is this the conclusion Gatto came to before students started roaming the halls, smoking weed, having sex, and attacking each other in and outside of school? It's 2023, and it still is tragic that you have to keep your head on a swivel, hope that your child makes it home from school or the corner store or the basketball court. Even monitoring a student's movement will not prevent some of the tragedy we are experiencing in our communities and schools. In a perfect world, or somewhere, not in many urban public schools, students can be unsupervised or unmonitored. I'm sure schools like that exist. I can see how undisciplined, chaotic behavior can be used to usher in the surveillance of everyone, Big Brother, the all-seeing eye, martial law, to obtain order through chaos. Our or some schools also suffer because of the communities they serve. The desire for social interaction, acceptance, and survival has superseded the desire for education and survival for some. The communities have been impacted by a multitude of physical, mental, economical, political, spiritual, moral, and ethical assaults. I commend the students who are able to attain an education in the midst of the chaos of the educational system and the community their schools serve. It is like they should receive 2 degrees upon graduation, one for academics and one for social, emotional,
navigation, and survival. Those who graduate with academic excellence and their sanity are truly blessed. And with that, I'm going to end the show. I want to thank everybody for calling in, anybody who downloaded the show. I want to thank Blog Talk Radio, We Talk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, and the creator, as always. Until next week, y'all. Each one reach one, each one teach one. Don't take my word for it. Do your own research. Don't be afraid to learn. Till next week, y'all. Peace out.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.